And I noticed it more on yours, and I don't know if I was just tuned in more than I did on the first two ladies that read. But you also have a, what we would call a house divided against itself, because one place you'd say, I want them to leave me alone, and then you'd say, I want somebody to be with me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and so it's like wanting...
I can feel that. I can feel that in here. I can feel that fight, that dichotomy, that...
Yeah. You ready to let that go so you can be whole?
I am.
Awesome. Anybody else? Before we move to the next part?
I just have a question on one. So, this was troubling when I did the worksheet. And now when I read it, it's still bothering me.
Okay.
And I...
It's bringing up bothering you.
Yes, bringing
that's up. That's one of the things we'll point out tomorrow when we do the worksheet, is you can't feel anything that's outside of you.
Okay.
So something can trigger it and bring it up for you, but it can't bother you.
Okay.
But it can bring up bother for you.
Bring the bother for me.
Yes.
Okay. And I want, will want to punish them, whoever, by no answer, unconscious or in denial.
Right. There were a couple people that did that. They had no punishment listed.
I couldn't put punishment.
Okay. And a lot of that has to do with upbringing. You know, oh, you don't punish people. You don't, that's not nice. You don't act like that. You know, but if you'll be honest with yourself, even if it's withdrawing, leaving someone, whether you leave the room or leave geographically, withdrawing from someone is one of the worst punishments you can do. Think about prison. They put people in solitary confinement. They move them away from other people where they have no human contact. So a lot of times it's like, you know, why wouldn't, you know, and look at it two ways. One is, oh, I would never do that. Well, I didn't ask you if you did it. Mm-hmm. What was your punishment thought? You know, we may say, oh, that's okay, you stupid person. You know, I mean, it's like,
but I wouldn't even admit that.
So why would you admit it? That's what you
know.
Need to do. That's where you need to go, is to be able to feel safe enough to admit that you've got that in you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's this. And until you can face it and own it, you can't get rid of it.
But I think the opposite was true of my upbringing, is that I was punished all the time.
Ah, so you were determined to not punish someone else because you were punished all the time. But if you're honest with yourself, take a deep breath and think about one of the situations you wrote about. Wouldn't you have loved to have either screamed or kicked or run away or something?
Denial. Like, I'm not willing to admit that I was.
Right. So that will probably be a big one for you.
Yeah,
when you can
so.
Get to the point where you can admit that I've got some rage in there. And, you know, the original rage starts in all of us when we gave this up.
Mm-hmm.
When we were around the age of 3 or 4 and we said, this isn't enough. You know, just being out here picking up daisies instead of, you know, working out in the field or doing something else, you know, that's not good enough, so I need to do something else that they'll approve of me. And so we gave that up and started overlaying ourselves with this, and when we gave this up, that's the birth of the original rage. Mm-hmm. And so when you get back to that, that's going to be a biggie.
Yep, I think
when you can admit that you've got that in there, and probably underlying it is the pain of it.
Are we going to touch on this more later, or is this a good time?
We can. No, go for it. You've got a question.
Yeah. Well, mine's kind of like hers. I saw that. How would I punish or, you know, hurt them back? And I guess I've worked hard to forgive.
Okay.
I have removed myself geographically.
So, leaving.
And... not spoken to.
Okay, big punishment. Both of those, leaving and not speaking, both of those is cut them off. And when you cut them off, you cut off a piece. I mean, you know, we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, oh, I don't like that finger, so I'll just cut it off, cancel that off. You know, and so, I mean, who's hurting from that, you know?
Well, I went then into another corner, and I reached out and sent my brothers and sister a card, and it was, hi, just thinking of you, and left my phone number, and, you know, so I took the first step.
And what happened from that? Did they come back?
Yeah. And we've been friends, and I've been able to hold on to that forgiveness. Now, you were talking about your possible, I don't like to say, I don't like to say things because it gives it energy to live.
But if it's in there, it's already got energy.
I'm curious.
You know, that's like me saying, you know, that she gave me that proclamation that I had, you know, breast cancer. Well, I'm going to think, yeah, no, I'm perfectly healthy, I'm happy. But deep inside, there's that anger that's creating that energy of potential breast cancer. I want to deal with that. I want to look at that anger and be honest. It's there, and get rid of it so that I can live. And just denying it is like saying, oh, we can spray some air freshener on the trash can in there. We can live with it through the weekend.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if, you know, if I am in denial and say I have forgiven. And
we do forgiveness. That's pardoning. If you let them off the hook for whatever it was they did, or if you let yourself off the hook because some behavior you did was maybe off target, that's pardoning, and that's not forgiveness. And so we're going to do forgiveness tomorrow.
Yeah. To me, forgiveness is, well, you forgive that action from either person, but and you forgive, but you don't forget, and you protect.
But if all you're doing is pardoning, you're not getting rid of the root of it.
Okay, because, so that's still pardoning there. Okay.
Yeah, forgiveness is going inside and looking at, and we'll go over that tomorrow. That's tomorrow's workshop.
Okay.
So, but,
that'll be good.
Yeah. And so how do I go inside? How do I remove those things? How do I get to the root of it and pull it up? You know, it's kind of like if you go out and you mow your yard and you cut the tops of the weeds off. But if you don't get down and pull the roots up, they're just going to come right back.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know? So this is about getting down and getting those roots out. So, and some of them are not our own. Some is genetic. You know, like the basis of my book that I'm writing is based on something I saw in a breath session that is a genetic thing. And it's come up, and now it's my turn to heal it. And I can either heal it so my children don't have to go through it, or, you know, I mean, somewhere along the way, somebody's got to step up and say, I'm big enough, I'm going to look at this. And so that's what we're going to do. What happens is those crystals dissolve and they release their content. Now that'll be emotions, thoughts, and the drug that you use to suppress it. They're all held in the crystals, so they release. That's all that like arthritis and things like that are, is crystals in your joints. And so different people store those kind of things in different places in their body. So where you have aches and pains, that's a place to pay attention to. Somebody mentioned Louise Hay when we were outside. And she's right on target on a lot of things. I really like her when I start, you know, something starts hurting or whatever, I will look, okay, what does she say? What's that? And, you know, it's things like, and we were talking about having the pain in the hip area, and most women have that. And part of that, it could be, like, I know part of mine is around sexual abuse. But it can also be about moving forward, because that's the part of the body that references moving forward. If your knees are hurting, it's that you're not getting your needs met. And, you know, so different things like that. Your hands, what can you not handle? If you've got eye issues, what do you not want to look at? You know, if your hearing is bad, what are you not wanting to hear? What do you not want to pay attention to? So your body is speaking to you, and we just need to tune in and listen to it, and that's why I think the yoga was really good this morning and tapping into that. So anyway, it stores in those crystals, and that's what happens a lot of times when people have been, like say, you know, they were an alcoholic and they've been dry for 30 years. And then they start doing things and get more and more vital, and all of a sudden they fall off the wagon. Well, part of that is that they got more vital. You know, we listed the things, you know, have you been doing more of the right things? Had you hit any level of vitality? You know, what's your elimination? And the last thing is craving that drug. Well, the crystals, when they melt and they release the alcohol that was used, then all that person can think of is alcohol. And so they go drink. If they realized that they were going through a healing crisis and what was happening, you know, they could probably, you know, handle it, deal with it a little better, and look at it a little differently than it just being in their face. The lady that wrote the super immunity, Carrie, she called Michael. It's just been a few months back. And she was like, Michael, I don't know what's going on with me. Because she's very clean in her eating and everything. You know, she does this work and all. And she's like, I am stuffing my face with ice cream. And she says, I don't eat ice cream. You know, Michael refers to it as cow puff. Because there's actually a certain amount of that that's allowed in your milk products. But the company I worked for before the pharmaceutical company, one of my customers was Domino Sugar. And I'll never forget when I went to visit their plant. and they were showing how, you know, the cane, you could see it going up the conveyor belt, you know, it's going into the grinder and all this. And they actually admitted that, you know, there's so many snakes that goes up with the cane.
Oh,
and there's so much meat that's allowed in your sugar before it's considered contaminated. So anything that's processed, you can expect that that kind of stuff is in there. But anyway, I don't know how I got off on that one. But
you did.
But she was saying, you know, all she could think of was eating ice cream. And she says, and I don't do that. And so Michael was processing with her, you know, well, what are you going through? What are you dealing with? And what she came down to was that whenever her and her father had some kind of a conflict or a confrontation or a conversation. Thank you for answering that one for me. I don't know if I went back and changed yours to confrontation, but when her and her father would have a confrontation and, you know, a big argument would happen, then she would make up for the big blast and to make things smooth in the house, he took them all out for ice cream. And so she was having some confrontation going on, so those crystals were dissolving, it was in her face, and ice cream was the drug of choice to make things right, and that was what she was slipping into. That's also referred to as TSRs, which is Terminate and Stay Resonant. On your computer, does everybody have a computer? You know what I'm talking about, that down at the bottom of the computer screen, there's little icons that are always there, and you just have to do one click, and it opens up on your screen. Those are Terminate and Stay Resonant. They're really on, but they're kind of like shrunk down or something and kind of out of sight. And it only takes one click and they're up. You follow me? Is everybody with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
We all have anything
about a computer.
Okay. If you open the computer up, all along the bottom of it, there would be, and you can choose what you want to leave down there. Like I've got Word documents and Excel spreadsheets and their database and, you know, certain things that I open a lot. Instead of going over and having to click start programs, you know, and find it or whatever. And I've got so many on my desktop, it's cluttered. So what I do is I put the ones I use most often down here at the bottom. And all you have to do is one click and it opens up. So it's like an immediate, almost like flipping the light switch and the light come on. Instead of having to get a ladder and put a light bulb in and, you know, do all these other things, you just flip the switch. We have Terminate and Stay Resonant things within us that we have built that this is my go-to. My go-to used to be leaving, and it was the first thing that popped in my mind when I felt like my back was against the wall and I needed to escape, and, you know, it's like I can't handle this stress, I didn't like conflict, so it was like I'd leave, whether it was geographically leave or just mentally leave or whatever. And so when you build those into your system, it's automatic and it only takes a quick trigger. Just like on the computer, you just do one click and it's open. So if that's your built-in run-to, then when something happens and it gets triggered, it's in your face. It's not something you think about and say, okay, I think I'm going to leave. It's just that's automatically in your face, I got to leave. I got to get out of here. What I've discovered is because one of the things, and Michael knew that was my trigger. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. And so he was like, you've got to take leaving off the table. That's just not a choice anymore. And what I went to and what I've realized is just below that is, okay, if I can't leave, I'm just going to get totally pissed. I'm just going to, you know, turn into the Tasmanian devil or whatever. It's just another cover-up. And so now I have to deal with that. You know, okay, what am I going to do with that? You know, I need to handle that. I need to look at what's below that. Anger is also just a drug to cover the pain. So when I went a little deeper in that, I realized, you know, it's like, okay, let's say that we're having a confrontation or a discussion, and I feel like I'm losing, and so leaving's off the table, so I can't run away, so it's like my fear comes up, you know, that because of past relationships and being abused and everything, it's like, okay, now it's going to hurt. You know, that's going to be the next thing that comes along, and so it's kind of like, you know, possums roll over and play dead, and they're, you know, kind of, they're not vicious or anything like that. But you back one in the corner, and it's going to come out fighting. And so it's kind of like that. It's like, you know, okay, I need to survive. But if we think about it, we'll talk about power persons more later, but you had a person in your life who had more power over you than you did, and you felt like your survival depended on them. It's usually a parent, but sometimes it could be a grandparent. You can also change power persons throughout your life. people that join the service, their, you know, officer or whatever becomes their power person. They do, you know, jump, how high do you want me to jump, you know, and it's based on survival. And so what we'll do is we will end up, when there's no stress, okay, let's say, you know, my life was going along good as a teenager and mom was my power person, and so I was just a good little girl. I did what was expected of me, you know, didn't cuss, didn't, you know, and of course we weren't allowed to do things like go to movies and dances and stuff. I mean, you know, it was just, I was raised super strict. But it was just being a good little girl, do what's expected of you and keep things smooth and calm. Then when stress built, then I would do what I needed to do to resist and survive with my mom, my power person. And that was, you know, either to just remove myself, go to my room, you know, avoid her or whatever. So I'm no longer the good little girl, I'm in an avoidance stage. Then when I became ultra stressed, because yelling and screaming wasn't allowed, you know, you couldn't do that, that was not being nice, then I would actually leave. I mean, I would just not be present at all. Whether, even if I was still in the same room, it was just like I disassociated from the whole thing. And what I realized after doing this work for a little bit of time was that you can have more than one power person. And my mom, while she was the one that would give you the voice or the breath, you know, or whatever, I mean, you knew she was pissed without her saying anything. What I realized was that my dad was my ultimate power person. He went to the farm all the time, and he still does. And so we had two homes. We had one in the city, and we had the farm. And he had good reason, excuses, to go to the farm. You know, the cows had to be taken care of or the, you know, different things. And so he needed to go there. Mom didn't like the farm life, so she stayed at home. But what I got to realize, and that was his escape. Now, they've been married over 60 years. But most of the time, they're in two different homes. He's at the farm, and she's in Bristol. And it's like I realized then that his way of surviving her temper and things like that was he would leave. And he would do it nicely. Now, my dad, and you can ask anybody that knows my dad, he is the calmest, gentlest soul that you would ever meet. I've never seen him lose his temper or anything like that. I'm just super calm. So I realized that what he did was he stayed nice, but he left. And so what I wanted to do was sleep. And so he was my ultimate power person. And that went into some different, you know, venues. It's kind of like we call them hydro effects. When you're doing a worksheet, and you may be doing it on, you know, your next door neighbor, and all of a sudden, oh, I need to do that same thing on my brother, and oh, I need to do that on my last boss, and that same issue happened with dad, and, you know, it's just like, it's, the Hydra was a mythical creature in Greek mythology. You cut off one head, and 10 other heads came out. It's like you couldn't win, it just kept, and so that's what happens when you start doing your worksheets, and that's why we also say to write them down, because you know, those things you would lose if you were trying to do it in your head. Then you write it down, then you've got a memory of it to go back and do that. But there's two tools. One, you've got the commitment. That is something I want you to read. It's also at the bottom of the sheet that we did yesterday, what your healing's going to look like. It's incorporated part of it into that, that when you kick into that, what my healing's going to look like, and life's horrible and terrible, and everybody's awful and mean, and you know, I feel like crap and all this kind of stuff, then you're going to make a new commitment. I'm going to do things different. I'm going to change this right now. Instead of, like you were talking this morning, your cells even remember. So it's not just, you know, in your brain, but your cells have memory, and we have to change those because we're just functioning out of the past when we just do that reaction. It's reaction, doing an action again. And so the commitment is one thing that, you know, you're making a commitment that you're going to do things differently in your life, and you're going to make a new stand. So that's one tool. So when we partner up, first I want you to read the commitment to each other, and then we're going to do what we call a love exchange. And the way you do that, and I like, there's two different ways. I like where you actually touch. I think it's really sweet. But we had an 11-year-old at Heartland, and she's the one that actually talked us into doing this. And used to, we just did the love exchange facing your partner. And then she says, no, you know, we got to connect. And she was actually Ari's partner. And so she would put one hand on the other person's heart, and then they would put their hand, and then you would put your free hand on top of their hand. Mm-hmm. So it's just a total heart-to-heart connection. And then what you're going to do is one person, and so one person in each partnership say, I'll be light.
I'll be late.
Okay, so the person that goes first, okay, everybody, I'm just going to get to send and receive, okay, and I'll tell you in a minute which one goes first on sending. So when you're the sender, just close your eyes and go inside and find the deepest, clearest love that you can find. Whatever it takes to get you to that space. Whether it's thinking of that newborn, whether it's thinking of a kitten, whether it's thinking of being out with your feet in the sand, whatever it is that can get you back to that connected, loving space. And once you get there, you open your eyes and send that love. Just imagine that you're just pulling that love up and you're sending it through your eyes to your partner. Now, the partner, the one that's receiving, is going to sit with their eyes open so that they see when their partner opens their eyes, they'll know that they're sending. And see if you feel anything at all. Now, most of the time we're saying, you know, rub your hand between, you know, or whatever to see if you feel anything. And you can do that if you want to. Or just sit and just feel it and see what you receive. And then reverse roles and do it the other way. Any questions on either side of that? Okay, light, you're going to send first. Okay? And so just face your partner and do the... So you're sending first. One that's worded a little bit differently on every mirror, and it's one you read to yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I shared this in the class yesterday or if it was here, but there was a lady that I worked with over the phone. I do private sessions. And so I told her, I said, go to the bathroom and stand in the front of the mirror. And I said, reach your hand out and put it in on your reflection of the heart.
Oh, wow.
And then put your other hand on your physical heart here. So you're touching your reflection and yourself. Mm-hmm. And then read the commitment to yourself. And so she felt such a shift on that. It was just, it was really powerful. So that's on every mirror in the house. So read it to yourself while you're brushing your teeth or whatever you're doing.
How is that different?
And what we did, what I did is Susan gave us both of them together laminated.
Hmm.
So you could just switch it over, but you could do it either way.
Yeah.
And I have that on my bathroom mirror behind my faucet, leaning up against the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever's in the bathroom sees it.
That's awesome.
And, you know, you don't...
It's laminated, so it's protected.
It's protected from the water, and, you know, so everybody sees it and gets that energy from
right.
it, whether they actually read it or not.
Right.
But I read it because the mirror's right there, so
mm-hmm.
you can just read it to yourself.
Right.
Awesome. Tell her what you told me yesterday.
I had it down as
this way.
My commitment
you.
To you. And I had that one facing up. And I got mad at my husband, so I turned it around to my commitment to me.
Oh. Okay, a little bit of
I did the worksheets on that one.
When the words differ.
It's where this is, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth, and I promise to trust myself enough.
Okay. So
and, yeah, because what you'll find is in a lot of things, you know, like especially, we're going to do the worksheet here in a few minutes, the forgiveness worksheet. And one of the things is, you know, when you get down to the bottom, if you're familiar with the worksheet, it says, when have I never done this? And so a lot of times, you know, you've got a goal for someone, I want them to, you know, treat me lovingly. Well, how many times in your life do you not treat you lovingly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I want them to trust me. Well, how many times do you not trust yourself or your own thoughts or your own opinions? You know, so you got to bring it back. That what we're accusing another person of not giving us, we're not giving ourselves either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so first of all, take your spring that you got. Take it between your fingers and push it down. What's going to happen if you let it go?
Morning.
They're going to fly. Yeah, and then we're going to be looking for them everywhere. So that's what happens when we have issues in our life and we don't want to deal with them. We don't want to look at them. We want to pretend like it doesn't happen or I don't feel it. You know, if I just stay positive all the time or whatever. These things are pushed down a lot of times as a young child when we're open and vulnerable and we just buy into whatever usually our power person has fed to us, that's true about us. And we get unconsciously hang on to it. It goes down with energy. You know, like you said, you've gone through a lot of your life. She didn't answer any punishment thoughts on hers. And it was, I told her, I said, you know, you're unconscious in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has something there. But she said, you know, well, that wasn't nice, or you weren't supposed to punish or whatever. But even though, you know, you might outwardly, you know, say, well, I'm not going to punish them, that's okay what you did, you know, I let you off the hook for that, and then you walk away with, oh, it was so mean, they did hurt my feelings, you know, or whatever. And so it's pushed down with emotion. And so it's just like that. It has potential energy, and that is actually got the most energy. So you can walk around with your mouth saying, I want to be healthy, wealthy, wise, and wonderful, and beautiful, and have everything, and everybody be at peace, and all this. And inside you're like, oh, I'm worthless, I'm a klutz, you know, whatever you call yourself. You know, I'm not worthy of that, or nobody loves me, or, you know, and those things have the most emotion to it. So it really doesn't matter what you're saying with your mouth. The things you're holding down and pushing down like that spring is sending out this wave that says, come show this to me. You know, it is actually becoming your issues and your disease, and that's what's going to draw in more than anything else that you say. And so what we want to do is to release it easily through worksheets instead of having it spring up in our face and grab us, you know, by the face. You can keep them or you can put them back in, either way. So on the terminate and stay resonant, like I said, when things, for me, seemed unbearable, stress was up, my back was against the wall or whatever, that mine was, I want to leave. And one night we were sitting at dinner, and this was actually before I started writing the book and digging into what was really lying underneath, you know, my life was pretty cool, you know, I can teach workshops and tell you all how to handle your stuff. You know, I got mine handled. Right. But we were sitting at dinner, and Michael was like, oh, Penny, for your thoughts. You know, do you ever had anybody do that, ask you that? Mm-hmm. And I looked at him, and I'm like, there was no thoughts. There was just like, I had left. It was total blank. There really wasn't any thoughts, you know, and I was just like gone. And so we got to looking at that, and at that time I was working it with a book called Courage to Heal. And it's written by two women, Helen Bass and
Laura Davis.
Yes. Thank you. And it's an awesome workbook. If you've got any kind of physical mental abuse that you've gone through, to work through that workbook, it really brings out some good points. There's some things I don't agree with her on, but overall, it really took me to another level working with that. But anyway, so I was working with that, and then we got to talking and processing about it. And what we found, I'm going to go ahead and hand this out, because it's easier for you to see it than for me to try to visualize it for you.
Are you going to talk more about terminate?
Yes. Yes. And before I get away from that, you had asked me to share on the commitment thing. There was a man during one of the Healing Through Relationships, which is a tool that we use in that, and he had come up at the end when we took intermission. He said, you know, my wife and I are getting ready to divorce. And I said, well, you know, take the commitment and read it to her. And he's like, you know, it's too late. There's too much water in this bridge. And I said, well, then you don't have anything to lose. I said, take it and read it to her. And he called me about 3 weeks later, and he said, we are like on our second honeymoon. He said, no more talking of divorce. He said, we're getting along great. He said, this is just awesome. And I said, that's fabulous. I said, when you read the commitment to her, does she read it to you? And he kind of stuttered around, and he's like, she doesn't know I'm doing this. Oh, he was like going in the back room and reading it to maybe her picture or something. Oh. And it totally shifted. We're all energy. Oh. And so, I mean, when we were doing that love exchange, did you feel the energy in the room? Mm-hmm. I mean, Nancy and I were both like, whoa. I mean, it was like the whole room was moving. It wasn't just us. And another lady had been at one of the workshops, and she heard that story being told. And she taught this in the Spanish community, and she was working with a lady one-on-one whose son, when he lived at home, and then when he got married, he left, and she hadn't seen him for 10 years or heard from him. I mean, it was like he just vanished out of her life. And she, so Nanae shared this, the story I just shared with you, with this lady. And so she went home and started reading the commitment to her son's picture. Mm-hmm. And in 3 days, he knocked on her door.
Wow.
I mean, it's wow. When a person, you know, we send out this signal, mm-hmm. You know, I'm holding this energy of fear. You need to come show me what I'm afraid of so that I can deal with it. And that person comes, and maybe they're a really angry, hostile person. And they show us their fear, but we're like, I didn't feel this till you came around.
so I'm gonna get rid of you, and I'm gonna put this right back down where I don't have to look at it, which guarantees I get to draw in another person to do it, another person to do it, until I'm finally willing to say, oh, this is mine, I'm gonna get rid of it, and then it totally changes what happens, what comes your way. It's like, how many have ever played tug of war? Okay, so if we're playing and we're tugging, you know, back and forth, and I drop my end of the rope, it changes your game whether you want it to or not. So when we clear up the energy in us that's saying, hey, come be mean to me, then that person still needs to deal with their anger. So they're going to, you know, and every time they find somebody that's afraid of them, it's their opportunity to say, hey, why am I being so angry or hostile or whatever, except they usually don't look at it that way, but it's their opportunity. So if you're not bouncing back and giving them their feedback, then they will go do it with someone else because they need that feedback too. So it's going to change what comes into your world. It's going to change what you're drawn to. If you don't like the creation, you don't like what you're bringing into your space, then look at it and do something different because you're the one that's creating what comes. That doesn't mean you're at fault or blame for somebody coming in and being mean to you. But you do have a responsibility in there that drew them into your space. And cleaning that up, and that may still mean holding them accountable for their behavior that was off target. Doesn't mean you're letting the other person off the hook because, you know, well, I'm a fearful person. I need to deal with my fear, you know, and just let the angry person off the hook. No, they maybe need to be held accountable, especially if they were abusive. It might even require calling the cops or something. So it's not saying to let them off, but if you try to deal with that while you're in the state of fear or hostility, then you'll make a mistake. Remember we said this list came from doing something you regret. So when that is active, we don't have our full senses. It's like having blinders on and we can't see it. So anyway, on the terminate and stay resonant, what we realized was that one of my things was to actually totally withdraw. I mean, to just, it's like my spirit or my soul left my body and was hanging out in the room observing or something. And that's a way of being able to handle the situation without actually feeling or the full impact of whatever's going on. So what Michael and I started doing was when that would come up, instead of him saying a penny for your thoughts, would be to help me look, you know, okay, you just checked out, what just happened? It wasn't at that moment we were trying to dig down in and find the, you know, the root of it or whatever, but to recognize the triggers. You know, did the lights just dim? Or did a certain build of a person just walk by? Or did the music shift? Or something happened to trigger it? And to start looking at that so I could be aware of the triggers. Because, you know, just like realizing that my TSR is to leave, to be aware when that comes up, oh, something just triggered my leaving. They show up. So when they show up, if we don't do the forgiveness work at that time, we don't let go of the fear at that time, what we will do is hook our fear into our image of the other person. And there's file folders, okay? Like, if you've been to the workshops, you've heard Michael say, don't think about a purple alligator. Now, you've got files on colors, so you know what purple is. You've got files on animals, so you know what an alligator is. But you probably never tied purple and alligator together. But now, you come to class tomorrow and I say, don't think about purple. What are you going to say? Because they're linked. They're actually chemically linked in your brain. It's kind of like if you think of your filing cabinet. You know, I have manila file folders about the car. And so all of the car stuff, whether it's insurance, you know, new tires, the mechanical work that's been done on it, whatever, all about the car, so they're all in one file. And then things about the condo, you know, there being insurance or, you know, whatever. And so we link them together. So when they're linked together, just like I said, don't think about purple and then alligator pops. Same thing on this chart. Anything in this chart that gets triggered, because you can see the lines, they're all linked. Everything's linked together one way or the other. So if, say, at the time of the rape that a certain song was playing or the lights went out or the person popped out of the door and I wasn't expecting them to be there and they startled me. Then that gets linked to the event. It gets linked to my thoughts around it, the guilt, the blame, the denial, the physical abuse, everything else. It's all linked together. So now I'm going through life and I don't hear, say, Michael coming in the door and all of a sudden he's there and I'm startled.
okay, all of these files at some level will pop, because they're all linked together. Even though that was a totally innocent event, I just didn't hear him come in, but it was that startle effect, and that was the same thing that happened when the abuse effect happened, then all of these file folders now pop out. And at some level, even if I just take a deep breath and go, oh, I didn't hear you come in, if I don't work on it right then, I've just added a little more energy to that event, pushed that spring down just a little bit more. And so being able to say, oh, okay, this has happened before, I need to breathe, that's absolutely the first thing, because holding the breath, and if you notice, if you're startled, one of the first things you do is, you hold your breath. A child that's having a temper fit, they lay down, hold the breath, you know, kick their feet or whatever. So breathing is the way you let it go physically, instead of locking it into your tissue. So at some level, all of these will fire when one little piece is triggered. So that was what, in the event at the restaurant, when we were looking at, okay, what just happened that just triggered me to disassociate, to leave? There was, it may have just been a little something. You know, it could have been in a conversation that was totally innocent, and all of a sudden just a little bit of blame for something popped up in my mind. Or a little bit of guilt or a thought of, oh, I forgot to do something, now I'm, you know, I'm going to be in trouble because I didn't do it, or, you know, I forgot to pay a bill, or, you know, just any little thing. You may think it's not linked at all, but then if there is some kind of blame or guilt or fear attached to it, if there is a strong enough attachment to these other things, they're all going to fire. And so it's being able to get down to the bottom of that so that we can heal physically, mentally, and emotionally. So now what happens on this is then the fear comes up, and we build our image in our mind of this person, and that they bring up my fear. So it's their fault. So we're blaming them. So we've called them in, and they've answered the call, they've resonated the fear, and we, if we don't, now at that point is the good point where you can go, oh, okay, this is mine, I let go of my fear. If we do that, then we clear this out, and we don't link it to them. But if instead of doing the forgiveness work on it, we say, oh, they're the ones that made me feel fear. And we put it outside, we're externalizing over here. It's not my fault that I'm feeling this fear. It's their fault because of their behavior. We don't take the responsibility. We call them in because we're holding the fear to start with. Is everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Okay. So we blame them. Well, if they're not a conscious being, or blaming them for them just doing what we call them in to do anyway, is going to trigger their anger. So this is going to we're blaming them, and that's going to resonate their anger, and they're going to come back up and build a picture of us in their mind that we make them angry. And so then they're going to blame us for making them angry. And you see how this, it's just a vicious cycle, and it just keeps going and going and going. And there have been times that, and I said, you know, Michael may or may not agree with me on this one, and that's okay. But there have been times where I have to take an intermission. Not that I'm running away from it or denying that it's there, but to stop that cycle, because it's just continual, da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like what happens physically, and it's all linked. The physical, mental, emotional, it's all tied together. But, and the body is so amazing. And you know that being a nurse. When you go in, and these are all some good things. I mean, the, like, for instance, the autonomic, am I saying that right? Nervous system. It's what controls, you know, your heartbeat, your digestion happens, you breathe. Most of the time you're not sitting there thinking, okay, I'm digesting my food. You know, you're not doing that. It's just automatic, it just happens. You're just created that way, and it's phenomenal. But that's also where your body memory comes in, too. Because it's just an automatic thing, and cells are remembering things. You know, if you have surgery, they put you to sleep so you don't feel the pain. But whatever part of your body got cut, it remembers it. And that assault is still there. So even though it's not in your conscious memory, your body has memory too. And so it needs to be cleared out as well. So when there is a sympathetic nervous system, tell me if I mispronounce any of this stuff.
You're right.
And that is the physiological changes that need to take place for you to survive. Some of those things come in really handy. If a lion's chasing you, you want to run. I mean, you know, there's just some things. But what happens is, and it's so cool, is that the, and I'm not going to name all the organs that are involved in it. It's like the hypothalamus and the pituitary and all these things. And they create hormones in your body that will kick you into certain behaviors. And it happens within 1/20th of a second, which is the space between two heartbeats. So that's super fast that this kicks in. So it's not like you can think about it and decide not to do it. It's just your body's automatic response that it's going to do this. And so if you are the type of person that, and I'm not positive, I guess I should look into this a little more, what creates one person being one over the other. But if you are in the fight, then what's going to happen is there's going to be epinephrine and cortisol, which increases your blood pressure, your blood sugar. It suppresses the immune system. It produces glucose. It turns fatty acids into energy to prepare the muscles so you can run. Now, that happens in a 20th of a second, that your body says, I'm giving you this glucose and all this stuff so your muscles are strong so you can just fight or you can run or you can, you know, whatever, and your body just does it. Another thing that's weird is that, well, it's not weird, it's awesome. It stops functions like digestion, salivation, and tearing because you don't need those if you're fighting or you're running. So it stops those. And it produces another chemical that makes your blood clot faster. So if you're a fighter, you're going to probably bleed. And so it's already prepared that your blood's going to clot quicker. I mean, like, it's amazing if you think about how the body does that. And we don't think about it. It just does it. And it makes you, you know, hyper alert and all that stuff. Now, there is another part, and you mentioned it actually this morning, the parasympathetic. Mm-hmm. And that is the part that says, okay, crisis is over, and puts everything back to normal. One of the two of you can be conscious enough to say, whew, you're stuffed up. Let me just send you love here, do the commitment, just hold the space for you while you process, you know, what's going on, how can I support you? But usually when you've drawn somebody in, you've got the matching bags of garbage and you're going to just trigger. And you're just going to do this thing. So sometimes you need to put it on the shelf and say, you know, I need to go get centered. We'll keep this conversation going later. You know, we'll bring it back when we're more connected space. Because if you just keep the cycle, you're going to totally destroy the relationship. And when I'm talking about relationships, it's with a partner, with a child, with a parent, with an employer, with a student, you know, whatever, co-worker. People at church, I mean, you've got relationships with the person in the mirror, you know, and so if at some time you don't sit down and say, okay, I need to deal with this so that I quit creating this, then what happens is you become so hypersensitive that your 1/20th of a second happens every 1/20th of a second, and it's just continual, and your parasympathetic doesn't happen. You never get to that calming space. That's where you get burnout. That's where people have nervous breakdowns. That's where they just go into total overload. I mean, it's just, you know, continual so much, and your body never has that calming time. So physically, even though all of this is starts out with a reality that you've created about an event that happened, then it's like you're just totally destroying your body physically.
And that's what causes like autoimmune things.
Yes.
The people that are constantly firing that.
Yes.
Fibromyalgia, lupus.
Exactly.
Diabetes, hypertension, it causes everything.
Yes.
Because if you're always like this, I mean, I'm right there. I've been like this for a year and a half. And
you can't keep going that way.
I can't keep doing it. I can't keep doing it. And you know, there have been times in my life where I had to quit. I took 3 years off from working full time.
Sabbaticals, they call them.
And I couldn't do it anymore.
There's even, you know, like pastors and clergy and things like that, they'll take time off to go away for a year just to, you know, it's like they can't handle the everything that's coming out. And we all have to do that.
Service profession.
Yep.
Service
profession. Yeah. Exactly. Now the third one, the fight and the flight, you hear a lot of. And what you don't hear a lot of is the freeze. And that's like, you know, I was talking earlier, like a possum. What it does is it freezes. And that is when you're at a point where, you know, as long as you're in the fight or the flight. It's like I can either fight and win, or I can flee, you know, and I can make it and get to safety. But if you're at the point where it's hopeless and I can't get out of here, you go into the freeze. And so that, when that happens, the way the body responds to that, it sends out, it's the same neurotransmitters, but it sends out endorphins and hormones and painkillers so that, you know, okay, I'm just going to freeze. I'm just going to lay here. I'm going to take it. So your body sends out these painkillers and things into your body so that you can survive the assault. You know, and I'm using it almost like, because I am talking about the physical abuse, but it can even be just a mental assault, that the same thing happens, and you just freeze, and it's just like, okay, take it. You know, it allows it, like a possum, you know, they simulate death. I mean, it's just, you know, and that's when you disassociate, when you leave the body or whatever. Most people, when they do that, they come out of it, sometimes coming out shaking, but they come out without the memory. It's like blocking it off, being unconscious mm-hmm. about whatever it was that happened, and it's a way of, if I don't remember it, you know, if I don't have to look at it and I don't remember it, then it didn't happen to me, and I can go on with life. I went almost 40 years without looking at my physical assault that happened for 3 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, I've not seen him again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've not talked to him again. You know, and it's like, you know, why even put energy
into
it?
Didn't happen,
it?
Right?
Yeah, it didn't happen. It's a part of my life that's gone. I'm in a new era of my life. You know, why even look there? But there was such trauma there mm-hmm. when it did happen. And when I finally started dealing with it, my body started releasing what it was holding on to and went into tremendous hip pain. I mean, my whole pelvic area, the bones just felt like somebody needed to go in there and just give it a good twist or something. You know, it just hurt so bad. And, I mean, it got so bad at one point that I went and had x-rays done because I just knew there was something, you know, bone cancer or something, cancel all that thought. But it was like, there's got to be something physically really wrong. And there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. So all it is that cellular memory of the event, hanging on to it. And when I was finally able to deal with it, even though it had been 40 years, then all of the cellular memory started releasing as well. And the pain and all of those things came back with it. So it's being willing to go through that, willing to look at it, because even though I was ignoring it and pretending like it didn't happen, it was there. And so, you know, we've got to deal with it because it's in there. But that's where people get the PTSD too, because you come out of it, you don't have a memory of it, you've blocked it out. And that's what happens in the, you know, they go to war or, you know, whether it's a bad car accident and people block out what happened in the car accident, or whether it was rape or whatever it was. You block it out. You don't have a memory of it because you've actually kind of left your body on it. And then when you're asleep, especially, we have three minds. I feel like I'm bouncing here. If y'all need me to stop and do something different, tell me.
It's fine. The point that she made, right?
Yeah.
To be aware of what's the lighting, what's the... Because, yeah. You know, as much as I know that, I tend to not remember it when I'm in that.
Right.
I tend to be focused on, oh, what's happening? Not,
right.
Okay, wait a minute. What just happened around me? What did I hear? What did I smell? What did I think? Yada, 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 yada.
All your sensories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it happens so fast.
Because if you can be aware of that trigger,
mm-hmm.
then you can also be prepared for it. Like, you know, say it's
right.
The light's going down.
Right.
You know, or whatever. I am one that, and, you know, I use the excuse that I leave it on in case somebody gets up at night, you know, and doesn't stump their toe or whatever. But leaving lights on every so often, or night lights or whatever, I'm one that would go in a room, and if I know the light switch is just inside the door, I would reach in like this and put the light on before I step into it.
Step in. Okay.
I kept a can of Raid out the front door for years when I lived by myself.
So it's, you know, we have these things that we built in that this is what I need to do. But what I was going to say is our so-called mind, we have the conscious, and then we have the subconscious. I just forgot how to spell. And then we have the unconscious. Now, there is a small space between the unconscious and subconscious. This is the stuff that we keep down like that spring. These two, the subconscious and conscious, switch places all the time. Like, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, pop into your conscious, my car's blue, or my car's white, or whatever. Now I say, what's the front door of your house look like? So the color of your car now drops down into subconscious, and the what your front door looks like pops up. You're not thinking about your car anymore until I say it again. But, so these two change positions all the time. The subconscious is all the information that you know, and when there's enough amplitude put into it, like me asking a question, you know, what's your favorite item in clothing? What's your favorite food? You know, what did you come here to heal? How did you just hold your breath? So those pop back and forth depending on the energy that is applied, the question that's asked or whatever, that resonates that information and it pops forward into the conscious. Now the unconscious is what we push down. We don't want to deal with the event that happened 40 years ago that I'm not looking at or whatever. When you're asleep, this opens up more. And the unconscious information floats up easier. You have dreams, maybe nightmares. I have a whole lot less nightmares than I did, but when Michael and I first got married, and he was so tapped into me that a lot of times he would reach out and just go, breathe. Before I even realized that it was a nightmare, or before my nightmare woke me up, he was just tapped in enough, he'd reach out and just touch me and say, breathe. And but now they've gotten less because I've been doing work around it and everything instead of pushing it all down and not dealing with it. Then I'm starting looking at what are the issues and things and allowing it to come forward. But that's what PTSD is. You know, a lot of them have, like, I know Michael for a long time, not my Michael, but Michael C. He and his wife couldn't sleep in the same bed because he would go into full-blown PTSD during the night having nightmares, and he's liable to hit her or choke her or something. And, of course, he didn't mean to. He'd be back in the, you know, war or whatever. And so they would sleep in different beds, and now he's been doing enough work that they're back in the same bed again, you know. So it's being able to get in here and to look at it, because we're carrying it around and just saying, I don't want to go there, I don't want to look at it, isn't going to make it go away. And it's going to impact the physical, mental, and emotional of our life. And so we want to get in there. But that's what PTSD is there's unconscious things popping up when they're triggered, and you put enough energy in there, enough things that are on that sheet that I handed out get popped, and then it just, the whole blown thing comes forward. So four things will happen when you start doing your work. If the other members of your family, whether it's a spouse or whoever, doesn't, one of four things will happen. First thing is, they will be like, wow, I really like what you're doing, what you've got. I like the changes I'm seeing, and I want some. And that's, of course, the ideal. Second thing is, you know, it looks really good on you. I support you doing it. I don't want it, which sounds like kind of who you are, you know. And that's up to you individually, you know. And I know a lot of couples that they're okay with that. You know, he's okay with her going forward and learning and doing and, you know, being, you know, doing the spiritual work or whatever. And she's okay that he doesn't do it. And so they're at that point, and it's a mutual agreement, it's fine. You know, and so a lot of times they'll say, it looks good on you, I support you keeping on doing it, but I don't want it. Third thing is, they'll be so pissed because now you're not controllable. Because when you start uncovering these things and start doing your work, then the hold that the world has on you lessens and lessens, and you're not controllable. And they don't like that, so they'll crank the heat up to get you back the way you were, where you were controllable. That often happens even in with employers or something, you know. And so it can happen in any relationship. And the fourth thing is, there's no reason to come out of here. And that's usually the other person not doing their work that says, I'm out of here, and leave. There could be, I actually talked about this on the radio show with Camille, I think it was yesterday. And she's come in that situation. And she feels like, you know, she's doing the work and she wants to do what she can to resolve their situation and their issues and stay together, but he's not willing to meet her halfway or do his part in it, and it's causing issues or bringing up issues between them. And I said, you know, you have to determine yourself. Nobody can say, well, you need to get out of that relationship. But if you leave a relationship out of your fear or your hostility, What was this? Have you ever done something you regret?
You'll do it all over again.
So you will do it all over again. You need to get back to a totally connected space. You know, I've seen couples where they're, you know, friends, and they're like, you know, I love you, and I bless you, and I wish this would work out between us, but it's not going to. I'm going this way, and you're going that way, and they part friends, and everything's okay.
That's what we did.
And that is the way, if you choose to dissolve it, and then continue to do your work around it, or you'll create, bring it back in again, because it'll be a lesson you haven't got yet, so you get to bring it in again and learn it again. But if you just say, you know, you're not doing your part, and da da da, then you're in this side, and then you split, and you'll do something you regret, and it won't be a happy ending. Okay? There's also a thing called, and I'm throwing all these things out because I'm getting ready to do the worksheet, and so I want some things stirring.
Wake up sheet,
yes, thank you very much. So, leaving and withdrawing, being mine, was, I call it pain by choice. Because if someone else leaves and it brings up hurt, and oh, they left me and I can't control this and I can't do it because they're the ones that left. But if I leave, then I'm in control of how much it hurts. It's the same thing with a twist of people cutting. I've worked with a lot of people who cut. And there's several reasons why they do. A lot of times they cut because they are in so much pain internally, and they don't know what to do to relieve that. And it's like they're lost to it, but they can control how much this hurts when they cut. They can't control how much it hurts in here, but they can control how much this hurts. Then the second thing that happens is your body sends out endorphins and things to, you know, start clotting the blood and anesthetize it and all that. And you can actually, after a time, get high on that feeling. It's a hard way of doing that. But it happens. And then a lot of times they're so lost in pain and what's going on for them that they don't feel. It's like just going through life and nobody can touch them. I mean, it's, and I don't mean physically. It's like, you know, nothing penetrates that shell that they put up. It's like they're zombies going through life. They have no feelings, no laughter, no joy, no sadness, no anything. They're just like, you know, automatons just doing what they have to do. And when they cut, they know they're still alive because it hurts. Mm-hmm. It's pain by choice. And so that is a hard way of doing it, but I think leaving, for me, was just this hard. It was, I control the hurt. I control how much it hurts. And so being willing to let that go, and instead of punishing myself, and then as a way of punishing, is to be willing to face it and move through it. Does that make sense? So when you say don't punish, think of all the ways that you do punish yourself. You know, because we all do. And what you're using to control what you're feeling, if you don't get the handle on it and do your work around it, will become the thing that controls you.
Say that again.
Yeah. It took me a while even when I wrote it down to get it. Okay, so the thing that you use to control pain, so in my case, leaving, and a person who cuts, they're using that to control something in their life. If you don't do your work around it, and you don't resolve it, and you don't forgive it, then it will become the thing that controls you. So by leaving, it would control me. It would control my decisions of where I am and what I do, and people that cut, it's like they can't handle anything else, so they have to go cut again, and then they cut again. And it becomes controlling over them instead of them controlling it. So it's another reason to dig down in and take care of that.
Like any addiction.
Yes, it is. It's an addiction. Absolutely. Absolutely. And learned helplessness. And you can, you know, one that has a fence around, or invisible fence around the yard, and they know if they go so far they get zapped, you know. And then you can disconnect the fence after a while and they still won't go there because they learned they're trapped. And so even though there is a way out, they don't step through that to get out. And so we are trapped in some of our garbage, and we have an open door that we can get out. And it's up to each one of us whether we want to do that or not. We can stay stuck in it and say, there's nothing else I can do, I'm just here, or we can step through it. So the next